In these daily programs, we're devoting ourselves to a thorough study of the great questions of life and death. What is man? What is his destiny? What are the possible outcomes of his life? These are not just academic issues. They refer directly to you and me as members of the human race. One of the hazards of living in the 20th century is the sheer pressure of doing all the things we have to do. I was in Africa recently, where many do not enjoy even the basic items of comfortable living that we all take for granted in the West. What impressed me was the way in which those African believers could give themselves wholeheartedly to things that really matter. After all, if you have no car, you have no servicing of the car to worry about. If you live in a mud hut, you don't have insurance forms to fill out. You don't have to worry about mortgage payments. It's amazing how preoccupied we can become with just keeping ourselves going through the daily routine. But the starkest of all facts of life is that we're going to die. And so a proper understanding of what the Bible has to say about death and the afterlife is something we should earnestly desire. It's only common sense that we should be informed about who we are and where we're going. We began yesterday with our search for truth in the book of Genesis. That's the book in our Bibles which deals with the origin of man and his first encounter with death. We looked at a verse in Genesis 2, verse 7, which should be posted on the fridges of every Christian home. It should be memorized by young children. It tells us who we are as human beings. That verse says that God formed man dust from the ground and breathed into him the breath of life, and man became a living, breathing person. You will notice that I did not quote the verse in quite the way you may be used to hearing it. Some of our translations say that man became a living soul, and that is not wrong, provided we know what we mean by soul. The problem is that often we have not taken time to find out what the Bible words really mean. What does this famous word soul signify? It's a word that appears about 750 times in the Old Testament alone. I'm afraid that students of the Bible have often been careless in the definition they have given to this famous word soul, nephesh in the Hebrew language. The term immortal soul, or never dying soul, has been tossed around as though it were a good biblical expression, but that is not so. One leading Bible scholar says, and I quote, "The immortality of the soul is neither argued nor affirmed in the Old Testament." When we read the Bible carefully, says another scholar, the idea of the natural immortality of the soul vanishes into the air. End of quotation. Now, these are not the statements of amateurs in their fields. They are the words of distinguished professors of biblical Hebrew. It's true they sometimes shocked their audiences when they told them that the soul in the Bible is not immortal. Sometimes even people thought they'd committed some heresy. But facts are facts. And these are facts that you can and should check out for yourself. It's so important to understand what a human being is. And one thing is certain, and that is that he's a living, breathing being, a living, animated creature formed of the dust of the ground and driven by the vitalizing power of God. But as we saw yesterday, the animals are also living beings. They too are souls, and they share mortality with man. Both animals and men die and go to the same place. Listen to the words of Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes. The fate of man and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and there's no advantage for man over the beast. All return to the same place. All came from the same place, and all return to the dust. Ecclesiastes 3:19. That's a remarkably sobering proposition, I'm sure you'll agree. Some have been so disturbed by finding it in the Bible that they set about to get rid of it. They even said that the writer of Ecclesiastes, probably Solomon, was not inspired when he wrote some of this book. They've invented strange arguments to dispose of the unwanted information about the mortality of man. They said that Solomon is carrying on a conversation with an imaginary atheist, and these verses, they said, speak of what an unbeliever would think. Of course, there's not a shred of evidence for this theory. In fact, Solomon said something else about the condition of man when he dies. He said, "The dead do not know anything." Ecclesiastes 9, verse 5. So you see, the fact that man is a living soul in no way proves that when he dies, a part of him gets detached from him and goes on living consciously. That theory comes, in fact, from the world of Greek pagan philosophy and has no business in Christian circles. Actually, the confusing idea that man has an immortal soul, which is really the man himself conscious after death, has done more to befog the whole question of men and women's destiny than any other idea. A whole mountain of theories about death and the afterlife has been read into the Bible, all because of the alien idea that man survives death as a disembodied immortal soul. From the account in Genesis of the creation of man, we can be sure of one important thing. Man is a combination of dust and the life-giving breath of God. Man is a soul. That's to say, he's a living being. Animals are likewise living souls, or beings. And the same words are used of man as are used of the animals. But you may say, how then is man superior to the animals? Here the answer is very clear. Man has the capacity to gain immortality, to live forever. That is what God hopes everyone will want to seek for, to live throughout eternity. So man was created for immortality. He was created with the potential to acquire immortality. He's a candidate for immortality. But he was not created with immortality inherent in him. If he's going to survive forever, man must seek and gain immortality. That, of course, can only come as a gracious gift from a generous God who wants his creatures to share the same immortality as he enjoys. What an exciting prospect! What an incredible challenge! Here we are as mortal beings, subject to inevitable death after a short period of life, the proverbial 70, at least for some. And yet God offers us the chance to become immortals. Now, by that, of course, the Bible does not mean that we are immortal just by being remembered for what we have done. No, by immortality, the Bible means that we actually can become creatures who can no longer die. We can put on the quality of being death-proof. But remember, we are not death-proof by nature. We must receive immortality from God. That is the challenge of the whole of the Bible and the whole of the Christian religion. Let's push our study of the word soul a little further. The basic meaning of soul is a living being, a person animated by the breath of life. Another main meaning is life. The word soul, says a leading Bible dictionary, is throughout a great part of the Bible the equivalent of life. But there are other shades of meaning to the word soul. It comes to mean an individual person, just as we might say that not a soul survived in an accident. We mean not a single person. Sometimes soul is connected with the idea of appetite or desire. The Bible speaks of a hungry soul. Sometimes soul is linked with emotions and passions. It may also include the intellect and will. So you see, soul in the Bible is an all-encompassing word. It takes in the whole living, breathing man with all that makes him or her human. What it never means in the Scriptures is an immaterial part of man which can go on living consciously by itself apart from the body. Now, there are one or two verses only which might suggest that idea. We will talk about them on another occasion. Let's look finally today at the terrible catastrophe which occurred at the flood. You remember what had happened to human society? The earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence, Genesis 6:13. And God announced his intention to destroy everything which had the breath of life in it, Genesis 6:17. And then we read the awful account. All flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds, cattle, beasts, and every swarming thing, and all mankind. Of all that was on the dry land, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life, the nishmat ruach chayim, as the Hebrew words are, all of them died. Thus God blotted out every living thing on the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things to birds of the sky. Genesis 7, verses 22 to 23. Not a word is said about the immortal souls of those human persons. They simply died. They ceased to live. That is the great fundamental idea of death in the Bible. It means to be cut off from the land of the living and to join the great world of the dead. We shall examine that world of the dead in a future program. But let me finish with a marvelous passage in the book of Job, which describes the whole process of man's death and his hope for the future. Job 14, verse 10. Man dies and lies prostrate. Man expires and he is no more. As water evaporates from the sea and a river becomes parched and dried up, so man lies down to sleep and does not arise. until the heaven is no more, he will not awake nor be aroused from his sleep. There you have, in a beautiful summary, the whole picture of the destiny of man. He falls asleep in death, and he does not wake up again until the resurrection. While he sleeps in death, he is unconscious, knowing nothing of what is happening in his absence. This is the constant teaching of the Bible. It is simple and clear. Where are you personally on the journey of life? What is your destiny if death should strike you unexpectedly? Are you prepared for the great sleep of death? But much more important, are you prepared to meet God at the awakening from the death, at the resurrection? If you would like to study these issues on your own, contact us at the telephone number given at the end of this program. We have some free literature we would like to send you. Join us again at the same time tomorrow as we continue casting our searchlight on the Bible in pursuit of answers to the great questions of life and death. These are life and death questions, quite literally. Until then, may God bless you in your search for truth.